Chris Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at midas.com.
CJ, I imagine we find you in Sunrise. Is that an accurate guess, given you were in Tampa a few days ago?
Yes, and it's nice out, I have to be honest. It's a gorgeous night here, about an hour from Buck Drop.
Biggest game of the year in terms of swing and playoff probability for both teams involved, according to MoneyPuck.com. What's the feel around this one? A win for the Panthers gets them back into the mix, and a loss for the Buds does feel rather devastating when you look at where they sit versus the Panthers, never mind the health of their blue line.
Well, it's kind of a weird game because I think it's fair to say these teams have probably never played what we would call a big game in their entire histories. I mean, they've just never had this kind of direct rivalry or direct path through each other to the playoffs. And you know, the Leafs are coming off another injury to Jake Muzz, and they're down three of their top six D now. So I think there's a fair bit of concern about that. And so it's kind of a funny feel to this game, but you're right. I think the implications are pretty obvious on both ends here about how important it is. And I think, you know, even looking at the Leafs side, having won in Tampa a couple nights ago and played pretty well while doing so, I think that there's some urgency to string together good performances, because that's not but something they've shown themselves capable of the last few weeks.
So, you know, you've got two divisional rivals, a massive swing game, a screaming 19,000 plus at BB&T tonight?
I'm guessing not. You know, I've been down here quite a bit for games, and, you know, even when the Leafs are here, and obviously they bring lots of Canadians and snowbirds out to the games, I've never seen this building full.
Well, and I guess that's probably a shot and a joke rather than an actual attempt at an accurate question. It's going to be weird.
I just wanted to take you literally just in case.
I know, and that's fine, but I'll continue down the rabbit hole here with a thought that if you can't sell a game at the end of February that has an incredibly huge swing on your ability to make the playoffs against a divisional rival, how are we doing with hockey in Sunrise, Florida these days?
I see where you're taking me. Well, I mean, you're right. It'll say something. And, you know, I didn't ask anyone. I don't know yet how many people will be at the game. Maybe it'll be a pleasant surprise because, as I mentioned previously, these teams have probably never played a big game before. So maybe something will happen here. I mean, Florida's just coming back from a 5-game road trip out west, so they haven't been home. It's not as though there's been a ton of games where people are getting some fatigue for, you know, three home games in a week or something like that. And, you know, I don't know where we're at with it. I mean, this is the first year. Certainly there's a lot of pressure in their front office to make the playoffs. You know, it's the first time they've ever spent right to the salary cap, and that's real dollars. That's not, you know, where they've acquired a bunch of inflated contracts and it's just on paper. I mean, they spent real money on this team. I think that there's probably been a little bit of disappointment with how they've performed, and, you know, no one better embodies that than Sergei Bobrovsky, who's not proven to be the cure to all ills here for the Panthers to this point. But, you know, I know he played well a couple nights ago when they won the game in Arizona, and you know, this is the time to make some money back to try to qualify for the playoffs and get this group in there. And, you know, I think they got a shot, honestly, with the Leafs as banged up as they are, and with Toronto's blue line not being the strength at the best of times. I mean, this is a bit of a pick 'em, and let's hope there are people here that are paying attention.
Okay, so one more on the Panthers. You had reported, or at least talked about, a need to cut payroll. What can you give us clarity on that? Is that reporting? Is that speculation? Is it you've heard? What was the word and what was the number? And give us all you can there.
Well, that was one of those times where I radioed myself.
Yes,
a little
exactly.
Bit.
So let's clarify the radioing.
I was on at Fan 590 in Toronto during deadline day when the Trocheck trade happened, like in real time, and they asked why, and I mentioned something I'd heard. I think where the truth there is, though, is that there's a feeling, especially if they don't qualify for the playoffs, that they're not going to run this thing back as a cap team yet again. And look, I think there's more to the Trocheck trade than just cutting salary, but that's part of it. I mean, it's lessening their long-term commitment. They got two prospects in that deal. They got a couple of players in Eric Hall and Lucas Malmark who don't have commitments too far into the future. So, you know, I think that they viewed it as a chance to improve defensively with a couple guys. And I do think that there's an element of repositioning how they're spending their money. But, you know, as it's been told to me since, you know, I do think that in Florida, those decisions yet haven't been made firmly by the owner. And I think a lot will depend on how they finish the year and
sure.
how many playoff games they play and all those types of things. But I would say quite confidently that it's not a foregone conclusion that they'll continue to be among the league's big spenders. You know, a lot is riding on these last few weeks.
Yeah, fair enough. And look, it probably doesn't matter a ton if they draw flies here in February, but sell out the building and go on a run in the playoffs. We understand that even the most apathetic markets can go absolutely bananas for postseason play. We've seen it in all kinds of Sunbelt markets before, or other struggling areas where winning fixes everything, it seems. Let's move to the Leafs, their opponent.
Success, too, I would say. Sustained success is part of it. Like Carolina last year was a bit slower. They go on a run to the Eastern Conference Final, and this year they've done a great job because I think they've got people on board.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What would missing the playoffs mean for Toronto? Because they are owned by a conglomerate of conglomerates. It's not exactly the owner that you have to manage up to so much as a board of massive multi-billion-dollar market cap companies.
Yeah, it would be bad, you know, to state it plainly. It would be a huge failure, I think. There's no way to shy away from that with the expectation that the team carries and with the way they've spent their money and been quite aggressive and even front-loading contracts and those types of things. I mean, there's been a lot of money out the door on this team, and for a number of reasons, it hasn't gone quite as well as they would have liked. And I do think that there's not necessarily repercussions in terms of a wave of firings. You know, we still have a general manager here, and Kyle Dubas is just completing his second season. I think, you know, anyone looking at it would say he was thrown into a bit of a hornet's nest with the contracts he had to negotiate right out of the gate. Sorry, someone just came up to me and lost my train of thought there. But, you know, and so I don't think that there's impatience on ownership yet with the management, but, you know, it would be a bitter pill to swallow. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating. I think the market has become, as you might expect, it's been quite volatile there with some of the losses the Leafs have had. It's not just they've lost games. They've either been beating one of the best teams in the league in the last 2 weeks, or they've been losing in very embarrassing, exaggerated fashion. So, you know, it's been, there's the real kind of firestorm building around them, I guess I would say. And I would think if they miss the playoffs, everyone's going to be on trial on local radio and in the media and those types of things.
No question. Let's move to another big game in the standings. Calgary at Nashville tonight. That's 6 o'clock Calgary time. Our pregame gets started in 47 minutes. What have you seen from Nashville and Calgary? Because I sure see a lot of parallels between clubs with high expectations that won their divisions last year, but here they are sitting in wild cards at the end of February.
Well, a little inconsistency, which seems to be the theme here. But also, I think in Nashville's case, you know, I think that they might be pondering bigger questions. You know, they went and signed Matt Duchene last summer, and they've made a coaching change in season. And I just think that they might reach a point where they have to really reconsider, you know, the way that they've built this team and look at some bigger changes if this doesn't get on track there. And you know, look, goaltending's been part of their issues. It's never as simple as the goalie himself being poor, but you know, if you look at Pekka-Rinne's performance, even UC Saros, it just hasn't been in line with what they could have come to expect in recent years. I think that's contributed to it, and they've had a lot of swings of emotion. They've gone up and down a whole bunch during the season, and you know, I would have no idea what to expect out of that game because you know I think that the Calgary is lived some of those same truths as well, and so you know, it's a tough one to kind of figure what will happen in these next few weeks, but certainly in Nashville, I think that with them taking some very consistent runs at trying to win a cup, having spent a lot of money, been after free agents, I think that they have a really interesting offseason ahead.
Yeah, I think either of these teams miss. We're talking serious audit on the core for sure. There's been a notion around the Pacific Division that, hey, all you got to do is get in and you might be all the way to the Western Conference Final if it happens to be an all-Pacific opening round matchup between the one and the wild card. And I was subscribing to that theory, but watching the Vegas Golden Knights in their last 9 games or so, I've come to think there might indeed still be a powerhouse in the Pacific. They have been great and survived an early barrage from the Oilers last night before just absolutely blanketing them in the final 40. Where are you at on Vegas right now, post-trade deadline?
Well, slumbering giant, I think, is the best way to put it. You know, if you look at some of their underlying numbers, even going back 6-7 weeks. You know, they lead the league in expected goals, shot attempts, those types of things. I mean, they've been excellent there. If anything, something that's held them back is the save percentage has been a bit low, and I think that kind of fills in the gaps on why they went out and made a pretty big deal to bring Robin Leonard in at the deadline. And so if that stabilizes, if a tandem of Leonard and Fleury can, you know, at least give them average goaltending, I'm with you. I think that they're a team that we could be talking about winning the Stanley Cup, quite frankly. I think that there's a lot of good things happening there. And, you know, with Pete DeBoer, that move seems to have worked, although, you know, I'm not totally convinced if Gerard Gallant wasn't still the coach, you wouldn't be seeing some of the same things happening on the ice. But you know, I just see a deep team that is performing at a high level. And you know, I do think the goaltending thing is, it's not nothing. I mean, what probably went unnoticed yesterday is that the team's goaltending coach, Dave Pryor, stepped aside from his job yesterday, you know, a couple of days after they made that big trade for Leonard. And so I think that, you know, just how they handle that situation, how it materializes, based on Marc-André Fleury's history, I mean, no one could have handled the Matt Murray situation where he basically, you know, came in as a very young goaltender and took the net from him in two straight years on the way to Pittsburgh winning those cups in 2016 and 17. And no one could have handled that with more class than he did. So I would expect it would be the same if something similar played out in Vegas. But, you know, assuming they can get that in order, you know, to me that they're one of the teams to watch and one of the teams to beat in the Western Conference.
Yeah, fair enough. You mentioned Gallant. What's next for him? I'm curious because he's owed money still. He could get in next year. He's been exactly through what Seattle is about to go through, and he's one of four incredibly high-profile coaching free agents, so to speak, heading into an offseason where there's probably 5 to 6 vacancies if you just count interims, expected firings, and that Seattle might pay to have a guy they want a year early.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. I think that they would be unwise not to at least bring him in and pick his brain about what he learned and see if there's a fit there. You know, what makes the whole thing complicated, though, is you're right. We're talking about a ton of different choices, which isn't always the case for any team that's going out and making that hiring. And I kind of wonder what those first few days after April 4th might bring, especially if any teams change coaches, you know, right after the end of the regular season, teams that miss the playoffs, that is, if there'll be a bit of a run on trying to get Bruce Boudreau or Peter Laviolette, what have you, to try to come in and coach a team, because some of this will be competitive. And so, you know, it's setting up for an interesting offseason, but Gerard Gallant definitely wants to work. He definitely wants to be back in the game. And I would think, given what he did in Florida, it was a brief time, but he helped turn around a team pretty quickly there that won a division, you know, coached their expansion team to the Stanley Cup final, and, you know, kind of had the rug pulled out from him in Vegas a little bit. You know, I think someone's going to take a run at him, as I do with Boudreau, Laviolette, and even Mike Babcock, should Babcock decide to come back and coach.
Walk us through the scenario that makes sense for Mike Babcock, his new employer, and the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are on the hook for massive amounts of money for the next three seasons. How does that play out? I don't imagine he nor the Leafs would allow a deal that pays him, say, $2 million or less. That feels way under market for a top future Hall of Fame coach kind of guy.
Well, I think what has to be worked out is what percentage of the salary gets paid by the new team and the Leafs. And, you know, even with the money the Leafs have, I think it's in their best interest to have him at least have some of that salary be off the books. And so I don't think that they would create a big issue if someone tried to hire him, if that's the situation that was going on. But I think for Mike Babcock, he's going to be pretty selective. And you know, at this point in time, I'm still not convinced he's committed to coaching again. You know, I think he's been on a bit of a world tour here since he lost his job in November, and traveling around, spending time with his kids and his family, and doing some interesting things that he can't typically do during the year. And he's getting paid still, you know, more than $6 million this year not to coach. And as you mentioned, if he chooses, it could be the same for the next 3 years beyond this. And so, you know, kind of instinctively, I want to say how competitive he is. He's going to be back at some point, but I think the ideal fit for him for the next team is a team that can win. You know, I think that he's got to be brought in with a group that's maybe just hasn't quite got across the finish line, where his experience will maybe get something different out of them. And for him, I mean, just his age, and, you know, I think that I just don't see him signing up for another quote unquote rebuild like he agreed to in Toronto, where, you know, he helped nurse the team to a certain point and didn't get to see it through. I think at this stage, it's got to be the right city, the right ownership, the right group, and then the money stuff, I do think, won't be so complicated. He's going to be getting paid at least what he did in Toronto by someone else for those first few years, and at least he'll be picking up some of the tab.
Man, see, everyone, I think, is into the idea of retirement. No one wants to work until they die, except maybe Steinberg, my co-host. But I like that idea of not working and doing the things. But then you're like old, so it's like, well, I can't climb Everest anymore. I mean, that paid leave, that's good stuff. And then you go next level, like $6 million a year paid leave. If I'm Mike Babcock, what? No way am I going near coaching until, you know, at least some of this money starts running off the docket. Go do some weird things. Go surf on some islands you'd never heard of. CJ, we need some of this $6 million a year paid leave.
I would love to know some of the names of the countries he's hunting in, because I know he did a crazy hunting trip somewhere in, like, Siberia.
Jeez.
Uzbekistan, I guess it was, at one point, and there's actually a video out there online. And so I bet he's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. You're right, the Leafs are funding it. And, you know, I think he's earned that. I mean, even the way things went down, I mean, that guy coached for 30 straight years, basically, across a number of leagues. And you know, he's never had time in November, December, January, February to do this kind of stuff since his early 20s.
Tell me you're not like a Steinberg. Like, you're not going to die in front of your computer while typing up an article for Sportsnet.ca. Don't do that to us.
I don't think so. Is Steinberg a workaholic? Is this what you're
saying? Oh, yeah, no, he's working. It's just, it doesn't stop. And then it's like, well, you know, writing an article here. I'm doing this. He does two jobs at this station, but on and on it goes. It's try to get him out. It's impossible. So he's just work. And he said, yeah, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And I told him, you're going to die working, Pat. And he's like, yeah, I know. Yeah, that's the plan. There's better plans.
I'm not signing up for that, Pinder. The older I get, the more perspective I have. I'm thrilled to do this. I work hard, but I've got some balance there.
Well, hang in there in Sunrise or Fort Lauderdale or wherever you might sneak off to in the next little while. Thanks, man.
Okay, we'll talk next week.
Chris Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at midas.com.